Good morning, everyone. Welcome to our City Council special work session this November 25th, 2024 at 6:59 a.m. Madam Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Mayor Prus.
Here.
Mr. Cleworth.
Here.
Ms. Therrien.
Here.
Ms. Sprinkle.
Here.
Ms. Tidwell. Mr. Marnie.
I'm here.
Mr. Ringstad.
Here. Okay, it is now actually 7 a.m., so... It's 7 a.m. First item is resolution number 5145, a resolution stating the City of Fairbanks legislation and capital priorities for 2025. Myself, Ms. Therrien, and Mr. Ringstad put this together along with our chief of staff, our regular chief of staff, not our acting chief of staff. And many of them were the same as last year, keeping them in place. So item number one, all we'll do is go through these individually. And again, if there's something else that you think should be on this list, please submit it. We're going to be meeting with the Interior delegation December 16th. So number one, concern about the high PERS rate of 22% being charged to municipalities. Jerry, why don't you handle that one?
Thank you, Mayor. We've had this on our list for some years. There's a piece of paper on your benches there that says item one information that I drafted late last night, but we can modify it or change it. But one of the biggest problems I see with people is they do not understand DB programs or the magnitude of the problem we still have with the first one. And I think they should know about it so you can make informed decisions. So I'll just read to you what it says. The majority of the 22% we are mandated to pay goes to retire the legacy debt of the original DB program. From fiscal year 2008 to 2023, all PERS employers, including the state municipalities, have paid an additional $7.7 billion toward the unfunded liability. Locally, the Fairbanks North Star Borough and the two cities within have paid $132.2 million for their share of this liability. That's all of us that have done that. These payments, unfortunately, will continue for years to come. This is possibly the largest financial fiasco in the state's history. The municipalities had a reasonable expectation that the state would be proper stewards of these funds and learned far too late that this was incorrect. DB programs always carry risk. The current legislation has two major problems that need to be addressed: the discount rate that is too high and the inclusion of overtime in determining an employee's high 5 years. If the state is concerned about employee retention, they have many tools at their disposal that do not require risk. Finally, if state leaders truly feel that the new DB program will work, then request that all municipalities be exempt from paying off any new debt created by the new plan. This would be fair, as the City of Fairbanks has no control over the management of these funds. I think we have a fiscal responsibility to citizens of Fairbanks not to get involved in something that creates debt for them, for all of us. And DB programs do, but you can mitigate that quite a bit. Unfortunately, that hasn't been done to the degree that other states have done. I just hope that when we meet with the Interior delegation, we can impress upon them that the magnitude of the dollars that we have put into this system, I mean, literally, in our police department and our fire department, every dollar that you pay, you're paying an additional 12 cents for legacy debt. So that's my pitch to the council. It's the only chance we have to meet with the Interior delegation and kind of inform them. And what shocks me is some of them don't know much about this. They just don't.
Ms. Sprinkle?
You say we've had this on the list a couple years now. Have we seen anybody bite at the apple or try to do anything about it?
No, I see them listen politely, but In Juneau, it's always this one plan they have in front of us. I don't see them looking at any options to it. I mean, the police department, when they wrote that letter to us, you know, they said that they're not in favor of a DB plan, which is interesting. They say they've talked to their employees, and that's not what they want. They like the supplemental plan like we put over there. The state could do the same thing. If they don't think Tier 4 is the greatest thing on the planet, and I wish I had Tier 4 rather than Social Security, but if they don't like it, you can supplement it. And then you have a fixed line item in their budget. You don't incur debt in the future. And there's things they can do to fix it. I think this they've chosen the one. It's kind of like an alcoholic who's been on the wagon for 20 years and says, well, I think we can handle it this time, so we're going to go back and try it again.
That analogy's right.
Ms. Therrien, then Mr. Marnie.
Jerry, where did you get these numbers?
I have a packet about this thick, literally, of all the data that comes out of Juneau.
Okay. You added it up.
If you, well, no, I've talked to a lot of people who are in the know. But I'll tell you, if you want to get even more detail on it, our lobbyist is probably the best source of information. And if you want, he could look at my numbers here and reconfirm them or tweak them if you want. But I think they're pretty rock solid.
Mr. Marnie.
Are we the only city that actually looks at this, you know, yearly? I mean, does Anchorage worry
Anchorage
about the
same? Doesn't have PERS.
Anchorage did not?
No, they're not in the system. Police officers are? Are they the only ones then?
I'm not sure, but I know they are. They went away from their municipal retirement.
Oh, then that's happened in the fairly recently, I would guess. But I don't know. I always heard that they had their own retirement system.
Huh. Maybe they had their own retirement system prior to 2006.
Yeah.
Who knows? Mr. Ringstad.
One of the things that has bothered me for a long time on our retirement systems is this push for defined benefits. That's about as broad as it can be. I ask people, what do you think you want? And they look at me and they don't know what to say. Defined benefits, I can define benefits and say, okay, you get $20 a month for the rest of your life. That's defined. There's one side that looks at it and says defined benefits means you go back to Tier 1. Well, I don't think there's much interest in that. But I think we have to be careful to not just go out and use buzzwords. If we've got a suggestion, we need to be clear about what we want. And I think from a city's point of view, it's important to say we expect they're going to continue to pay this. And if they're going to change it, they're going to take the risk, and we're not. This is just too big a budget item for us to keep going as hard. To make it worse is going to just kill us. So I think it's important. I don't see a lot of energy or expertise down in Juneau that's going to jump right in and understand this, but I think we have to keep it on the plate because I'm sure it's a big ticket item for the state. I don't know what it costs the state in total to pay that 22%, but if they were to decide to take that out of there, we got a big problem. We have to pay it ourselves.
Yeah.
Any other discussion on this one before we move on? Ms. Tidwell.
Are you looking to include this in the resolution?
I no more than say on one there. Concern about the high PERS rate of 22% being charged to municipalities, see the attached, that's all. I don't want it to. I mean, there's other things here we may have to add explanations to because they may not quite ensure, they might not be sure what we're talking about. I don't
mind, you know, the priority that's listed, concern about high PERS rate. I don't want to attach something that says we're not supportive of them looking for a defined benefit change in the future. I mean, we had the same discussion last year when we added that on there. I think it's fine to say that we're concerned about the rate that we pay. That is concerning. And I also, I mean, I agree with what John said, you know, to say that in the future, should they find a plan that works, taking that liability off of the city, I think that's fine to put. But I guess I'm not a fan of attaching this. We don't have attachments for all the other things. I mean, we'll get to sit down with them and have conversation and share our thoughts.
Ms. Therrien.
Actually, there will be an attachment that explains each of the items. We're just going through the list right now. I would feel comfortable with the first paragraph, but not the second paragraph, but that's how I feel right now. But there is going to be a actual little booklet that explains. If you look at the baby boxes thing, there's a bunch of stuff for that.
In review of this, it's very good informational. We should limit ourselves to the present, which the first paragraph does. The second paragraph is the future. And so let's limit ourselves to what the actual and factual is right now. Mr. Ringstead.
Realistically, the chances of something of substance going through the legislature on this subject this next session are probably pretty small. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should be out of the future deal when we actually get down to putting legislation on the table to change the system into a new system. I think we need to be in that discussion since we're paying for the last one. But I think, in the next 6 months, I doubt that they're going to pass anything. So we should be involved in the future part of it.
Mr. Clearworth.
The last paragraph, I think, is constructive criticism. We're not just saying we're against it. We're saying you've got problems with it. And these are indeed problems that a lot of the sponsors, and I talked to a state senator last summer, and she had no idea that overtime was included in this. None. And a sponsor of the legislation. And if you do not want that to be in there, at least let's add on to the first paragraph that if there is any new debt incurred, we want protection for the citizens of Fairbanks. That's who we represent. They don't have to pay the bill again for something they did not cause, something we did not cause.
Any other discussion? Let's go to number two.
I would agree with, finally, if state leaders strike everything up to that. Just say, finally, if state leaders truly feel that the new, then we request the municipalities be amended.
Thoughts on that?
I'd be happy to compromise on that. We can add that to the first paragraph.
Thank you.
Okay. When we talk to them, I can... You can say whatever you want. So anyway, yep.
Okay. Any other discussion before we move on? Item number two, mitigate municipalities liability regarding the PFOS, PFOA groundwater contamination and fund remediation efforts for PFOS, PFOA groundwater contamination. Discussion. Ms. Sprinkle, then Ms. Therrien.
In the language we have here, are we asking the state to take care of all of it? You say mitigate, so I don't know what that means in this way. What do we want them to do?
Reduce it.
Mr. Char, do you want to?
There's two things that we're asking for in this priority. The first is some kind of... We have a lot of exposure when it comes to PFOS and PFOA. A lot of municipalities in the state of Alaska do. And there are certain things that the state legislature and, frankly, Congress can do to minimize our legal exposure to suits. The second piece of this is to put resources to actually remediating the problem. So we've got PFOS, PFOA contamination, contaminated sites, to be able to put some dollars to that so that we can reduce the impact and help safeguard folks. So it's actually two different requests jammed into that same thing on the same topic.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Mr. Clearworth, your light is on. Mr. Ringstead.
I agree with where Tom is. I mean, we really have two issues here. Stop our liability any which way we can. But when it comes to remediation, I don't see where we're going to have the money to pay for all this. Quite frankly, I'm not sure on a statewide basis the state's going to come up with the money to take care of this. Ultimately, I'm guessing PFAS across the country is going to become a federal issue. That's kind of where I'm looking at it. Going down the road, stop the bleeding from a liability point of view, and then figure out how we're going to fund it to keep it going. But I don't think we're going to clean up all these that we do. Will we get the drill test back over here in Cowles Airport, right? So,
yes, Mr. Chard.
So just as an example of Mr. Ringstead, you're correct. The scale of these projects is beyond what I think generally a municipality can do and approaching even what the state can do. There are some examples. So down in Gustavus, they had these foam things that were underneath their docks that were leaching PFAS, PFOA. The state went through and cleaned up a lot of that. Over down here at the airport, there's been some efforts to clean up some of the PFAS down there. There are some very small-scale targeted things that the state could do. And I know Mr. Clearworth has mentioned this in the past, but even looking at the state's liability in shared sites that have been that are now PFAS contaminated sites, what was their role? What's their responsibility? Is it only the municipality that has to shoulder that? And the final thing that I think that they've been helpful in, there's been discussion about the AG's office and their level of involvement in some of the national lawsuits. So rather than have all the municipalities try to duke it out with Dow and 3M and everybody else, have a more coordinated approach to that. And a lot of the municipalities in the AG's office of the state have been communicating, but we'd like to see maybe a little bit more on the state side there.
Any further discussion? We'll move on to number three. Allow tier 1, 2, and 3 PERS retirees to continue to collect retirement if they return to work to fill critical shortages under tier 4. Mr. Ringstead.
Not sure how this works. So if they come back to work, they get into a different retirement system as tier 4?
They're under tier 4 now.
And I'm,
well, no. Our police aren't, but you have a tier 4 system.
So then for the period of time when they come back on, they have to stay there a period of time and get vested and get into a new system? I'm not sure just how does it work?
I think what
Chief, come on up. Chief, come on up. You've been chomping at the bit on this one. Thank you for being here.
I've been pitching this for the last 4 years to the Interior Delegation. So the idea behind it is Tier 1, 2, and 3 employees have a defined benefit system. They're allowed to retire, collect their pension, just like they would regularly. But the current working rules in PERS prevent them from coming back into any PERS position, not just police and fire, any PERS position. So if they wanted to go drive a grader for DOT, not allowed because it's a PERS position. So what I'm suggesting is they allow those 1, 2, and 3 employees to come back in and go under tier 4. So the liability that we're talking about with tiers 1, 2, and 3 doesn't go, I mean, it goes away, right? Because they're coming back into the PERS system, right? You guys are still paying for tier 4 employees. A portion of that money that's paid to that tier 4 employee goes into the bigger pot to pay the tier 1, 2, and 3 guys. So they're still, there's still that funding source, right? Not like previously we allowed, PERS allowed people to retire and come back to work, and they took them completely out of the PERS circle. They weren't paying anything in the PERS. This allows them to still contribute and protects that unfunded liability.
Ms. Therrien, then Ms. Sprinkle.
Chief, so while they're working, say for the police department, they don't get their retirement?
No, they would be able to collect it.
They would get, still collect.
Correct.
Plus
they'd be able to collect it plus work.
That's what I thought.
And put into the tier forces. Just like if they retire out of tier one, two, and three, and they go to work for, you know, a different union, they're still putting into another retirement system. Or if they go to work for themselves, they're probably putting into a 401k. Essentially, that's what tier four is. It's just a 401k with the state and the city kicking in, you know, a portion of that.
Ms. Sprinkle, then Ms. Rungstad.
So when we have the summer police visit with us, is that the hiccup we're running into, or are they somehow working around it? Is it because it's part-time?
We're working around it because they're working part-time temporary.
Part-time.
So,
okay.
Yeah, they're working, you know, 30 hours a week. So if this were to change, we would be able to put them down there for 40 hours a week. If there was overtime for special events, they could come in and do that. Right now, we have to modify their schedule to meet those event needs. So,
great.
Yeah, it would greatly help. You know, we have those two guys. We have Lieutenant Roop. Retired Lieutenant Roop wants to come back and work, and we're trying to work with him now to figure out how that would work. And it looks like, you know, we'll have to bring him back part-time if he wants to come back.
Okay.
Where he'd come back full-time for us as an officer if something like this were available to him.
Ms. Therrien.
Chief, could you write us up a little paragraph about that?
Oh, I have pages.
Okay, well, maybe I have a page.
Yeah, I'll send you the,
you know,
I'll send
you
the letter
know
what
that we have from last year, but it can't hurt for you to just explain it as carefully as you did there, and it's so clear.
Yeah, most definitely.
Mr. Rungstad.
So are they vested immediately in Tier 4? Is there a period of time that you got to work to get into Tier 4 to actually get something? I mean, I'm looking at some of these people who are already retired. They're probably not looking for another 20-year career.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah.
If
so the vesting in
a couple of years, does that mean if you got to work five to get vested, then you don't get anything anyway?
Well, it's not, anything.
It
so it goes. It's a 5-year vesting period to get 100%. But there is a scale. The farther you go from year one to five, the more percentage that you take. So if you left at year three, you take roughly, I think it's 50%, something like that, of what the state or the city put in. You always get your portion. Whatever you put in, you get. But there's a step structure to what you get of the rest of that money.
Mr. Clearworth.
If you said, is 30 years the magic number? I mean, I'm sorry, 30 hours a week the magic number?
It's 29 for part-time, 29.5,
29?
I think,
okay.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. You know, years ago we tried to work a way around this. We would hire him under a contract, and then the state got mad at us.
Really?
You were trying to do essentially what you're trying to do, just a different venue for it. They need to change it. I totally agree with you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Four, maintain SAR funding to help communities meet testing liabilities. Discussion, we had this one last year. Okay, we'll move on.
Can we?
Oh, there was some from Ms. Sprinkle.
Right, just remind me, SART. I know it, but it's the section. Yes, okay, very good. Thank you.
Testing.
I think that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Five, ensure the University of Alaska Fairbanks is a priority for university operational and capital funding. That was from Mr. Rungstad last year. It's coming this year. Mr. Rungstad.
We make a tragic error talking about University of Alaska Fairbanks. The university is headquartered in Fairbanks, and for the last 30 years, we have watched methodically our statewide administration move out of Fairbanks, move to Anchorage. Those are a lot of good-paying jobs that should be here. I just got another thing in the mail today. Or yesterday, Saturday, whenever that was, University Foundation, their fundraising efforts. But guess what? Return address is in Anchorage. You know, we've got some of our statewide vice presidents working in Anchorage. They're slowly but surely moving that out of here.
Do you think we should have more of a conversation with the University of Alaska Regents?
Oh yeah. Oh, no question.
Okay.
And we're about 30 years late on that, but we need to do it. But the importance to Fairbanks is not just UAF, it's the whole university. I mean, if you pull statewide administration out of here, you're talking, I'm guessing, several hundred jobs, and they're good jobs. And once you do that, then it's harder to protect the UAF part. So we need to maybe say the University of Alaska in Fairbanks. Now, we don't just care about the campus. We care about the whole university and university administration.
Is that a amendment you were wanting to make?
Yes.
Discussion?
Okay.
Okay, concurred. We'll put that in there. Any other discussion on this one? Let's go to number six, allocate funding to prioritize development and expansion of a crisis behavioral health system in the state of Alaska. I wonder who this is for. Brenda, come on up. You're here.
Morning. That's a pretty general statement. I think prioritizing, you know, supporting the Alaska Mental Health Trust Authority in building the system would also be fine. The state has not taken steps to assist. The governor vetoed the money that had been passed by the legislation this last session. So if it's really going to move forward statewide, the state is going to have to pick up some of the cost.
Mr. Ringstead.
Do we know how much money we're actually asking for, and where is it coming through?
So, and I might not be the complete expert on all the state stuff, but they've done it through the mental health budget, and then they've had line items through the general fund, too.
So similar to what we've been doing in the past.
Yes, and they've been vetoed. And then the crisis now idea was actually an idea from the state first. They had put it in a plan for strengthening the system. Then the trust came on board, and the state has gone to all the meetings and supports it, but no significant amount of money towards funding mobile crisis teams. If they started to help fund some mobile crisis teams, more could be developed, or the trust can move towards focusing on the stabilization centers more instead of just the mobile crisis teams. And then they can do, and they are working on this, they are doing a methodology study to fix the reimbursement rates for the mobile crisis teams. So they're doing some things that will take some time on that.
Any other discussion? Ms. Therian.
Brenda, I don't know if last year you put together something to attach to this. Could you do that again?
Yeah, we definitely have some general paragraphs. The trust has a draft of some very specific things, such as overtime exemptions and stabilization centers. Do you want to keep it quite general, the attachment?
Thank you very much, Brenda. Greatly appreciate it. Let's go to number seven. Established legislation with significant fines and penalties for intentionally exposing first responders and medical personnel to bodily fluids. Discussion. Ms. Sprinkle.
Well, is this for police or for fire?
Everybody.
Both.
Spitting, yep. Things like that.
Ask the folks in the ER. They'll tell you.
That's classified as an assault.
So why is it not
happening? Yes. Do I look like I work in Juneau?
Well, I'm just wondering if this has been on the list for a while.
My thought would be it'd be a wonderful item for any legislator to pick up and carry.
It seems easy enough,
right? It's a great flag. So let's put it as a priority and see what happens. Yeah,
it's crazy. It's on a list. Very good.
Okay. Eight, update Alaska statute 40.25.110 to allow fees to be applied for any video copying and or editing required for public records request. Boy, that sounds like the chief. We've had this discussion, but let's do it again, sir. Thank you for being here this morning.
Sure. So I think ultimately we just want some clarification on the video side of things. Currently, the way the state statute reads is videos are considered documents with regards to the Freedom of Information Act. Therefore, we can't charge a specific fee when we are redacting body camera video. So we just like the ability to be able to charge them what it costs us to do the redaction. As we've talked about previously, you know, it takes Mike in evidence quite a while to do those video redactions. And when we have multiple body camera videos, car camera videos at a scene that goes on for extended period of time, it could take them up to a week to do, you know, one request. So we just like to be able to recoup the money that we're spending having him do all that.
Ms. Therrien and Mr.
Danny, don't you also want this for your office?
This doesn't really pertain to the records request that for my office, but citywide it does have a big, I mean, it's basically what the chief is saying. They do most of this, of the video audio redacting work for public record requests at the city. But I think it would be helpful for the state to give some clarification on what fees can and can't be charged in regard to public record requests.
Good. Thank you.
Mr. Ringstead.
So if this doesn't help you, how do we make this? If we're going to do it, let's do it once. Help you too.
Mr. Chard.
The chief and his team do feel the brunt of this video copying editing problem. There is some discretion given to local governments to charge the fee for what it costs to actually do this, but Chief is correct. The language is a little vague. Councilmember Ringstead, to your point, I know one of the issues that we have, that the clerk and I and Chief and others have been talking about this, the Freedom of Information law here in the state for a while. There's problems with the law. We've got one example now where you get 5 free hours every month, and so the person is going to have a series of requests for until the end of time to take up the 5 hours every time. Well, if a bunch of people do that, we have a problem. We have a resource problem. I think that the law, as it's written in the state, needs to be updated to understand video and audio and kind of just the world that we're in right now. So if the legislature were to pick up something like this, I suspect that there'd be a bunch of improvements, hopefully, to the law that would help us.
Mr. Marnie. Sorry.
Do we have $100 an hour? I mean, where are we going with this, dollar-wise?
Well, I think we'd utilize it the same way. Well, we could do a base fee for video redaction, but ultimately after the 5 hours, it's gone back and forth quite a bit, but after the 5 hours, we can charge for what the individual, makes to do that. So if it takes, you know, Mike 40 hours, we can charge his fee for 40 hours after the 5 hours, if I'm...
Thank you.
We've gone round and round on this quite a bit.
Ms. Ring said anything else? Your lights.
Well, I just so as we, Tom, as we get into updating the legislature works this process, are we going to ask? Is it a different set of statutes that we have to put in there? I mean, we might as well make it broad enough to fix Danny's issues as well as the police department.
40 Alaska Statute 4025 is the general Freedom of Information law. 110 talks about a lot of the stuff. I think that's fine. And, generally what happens is if we get down the road a little bit and Yuri needs a little bit of fine-tuning on some of the language, he and I talk.
And Ms. Sprinkle.
Okay, so does this also need some backup support material from the chief?
I didn't hear what now.
Does this also, this number 8, need backup material to accompany?
I can provide something.
A little something.
Yeah, I mean, there.
So what's on the screen is what was provided last year for any items that are repeat items, but these can be modified, and I'm sure that we can get departments to weigh in and make updates if necessary.
Thank you. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you, Chief. Greatly appreciate it.
Oh, one quick update. I talked to my counterparts in APD. All of the Anchorage municipalities in PERS now.
Number nine, exempt local governments from vehicle registration fees. Mr. Cleworth, this was yours, wasn't it?
Right.
Oh, Mr. Ringstead.
Yeah.
I was figuring you'd be after them fees, Jerry.
Well, the other day, Mike commented about our having to re-register all of our vehicles, and we've got, I don't know, several hundred of them. Mike said, yeah, it's cost us something like $40,000 a year. I mean, I have no idea why the state needs to track our vehicles. Where they're giving out these permanent tags now, every one of our vehicles, I'm assuming every one of our vehicles has the city of Fairbanks logo on it. And
this morning, while I was watching both the sidewalks being done and the roads being done, every vehicle had a stick, had a logo.
And the truth of the matter is, these kind of things in the state system don't get looked at. They're considered in the budget. They're considered fees that come in. So the fees come in, stay with the department, and it just keeps going. A number of years ago, they got some push, and they finally said, okay, you can do these permanent tags, tags for trailers. As many of us that have trailers for our toys, you know, rather than every year have to pay $100 for every trailer, get one trailer, one tag, and you stay there. And that would be my thought to do this. I mean, we're spending $40,000, and somebody is going through the trouble to get all these things re-registered every year. I mean, there's no point to it.
It's free money to them.
It's free money to them, yeah. It's exactly what it is. Keeps people busy.
Great makes idea. Work. Great it's idea. Work, so. And this, as a legislative thought, works basically with all the high populated municipalities. So you'd probably get their buy-in.
I would think so. I mean, they're all, I mean, yeah. All, they're all having to do it.
Yeah. Okay.
Does this include council member cars?
Yeah, we'll have to work on that. Small amendment at the last minute.
Also, I think I need a
yeah, the old age tag, come on.
Yeah. Okay, maintain a baseline of $60 million annually in the community assistance program funding.
I think we should be higher.
True, but let's.
Better than nothing.
Yeah.
Where's that number come from? Just curious. Where's the 60 come from? From what to what?
Oh, it was some years ago in Juneau, they arguing over the amount, and that's the number they came up with.
Okay, so it's a history. Okay.
Depends on how their cash flow is.
Yeah, I don't think there's any rationale behind it.
Just a number.
Just a number.
Just a number.
11, allow the community block development block grant to be used for housing as is intended by the federal government. What we found was it's a federal program passed through the state to the local municipalities and communities, and the state put all these restrictions on it. I've already met with the state Department of Commerce and Economic Development, and it didn't click on to them yet. It just didn't click on. And so I'll be meeting with the commissioner again, and then if I have to, I'll just go around them directly to the governor. It's just ridiculous. You know, we can't use it for housing per se. We were able to sneak it through and use it for the on Moore Street there, the food distribution location there for senior lunches program, food program on that building by Darlene Sample. And but we can't use it on the senior center across the street, because that's individual. And so we have to work on that one. There's many things that we've wanted to do, and then you look at the state restrictions. So that's it's a project of ours. And simple as that. You know where it's at, you know where some of the issues are, and you'd never think it, but there it is. Okay, 12. Adjust legislation around the child abandonment laws to allow for baby boxes. And boy, Mr. Marnie, good job.
Well, this has been my passion for a number of years, and I would like to have this done before I term out. You know, I don't know, you know, a few years ago we had a baby that was abandoned out on, I think, Chena Pump, that area. I don't know if the occurrence had happened over here on 10th, that baby would have been able to have been given away, if that could have saved a life. I've been kind of involved in this. I got a hold of Ruben last year by a phone call at the end of legislation, and it was under House Bill 107. And so reading this, I have talked to Will Stepp and Frank Tomaszewski. So those are my two people that I, and maybe Mike Prox, I had side conversations with, and those that have other representatives that they know and talk to. That's the way to get it done. So at least opens the door that we know, you know, is it going to be over the fire station? Is it going to be at the hospital? I mean, something the community needs.
Ms. Sprinkle.
So, you know, I think it's a great idea. There's no pushback here. I just wonder, adjust legislation, because there's something keeping it from happening?
Evidently, legislation.
Well, won't allow it at all. Yeah. Interesting. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, it's a felony to
abandon a
baby. And just recently in Anchorage, a little baby got abandoned and froze to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, so this is really
important. You know, God. Only good can happen from this if we work out. Only good. Okay. 13, fund the Emergency Service Patrol in Fairbanks.
I just think that we should ask the legislature to help us. So,
will they look at this and say that should be your job? It's police, but I just, where would they fall on something like this?
Out of health and social services budget, I would think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mr. Clayworth. Yeah,
Valerie, are you going to be putting an attachment to that for a dollar amount? Yeah. Or anything?
Okay. I don't think. I'll work with Mike coming back.
Yeah. Yeah, he'll be back from his from his love boat trip next this at the end of this week.
Okay. I think Ms. Therian, I'll work with you, because Mike isn't due back until the 2nd. Okay. And we'll need to have it to the clerk by Wednesday. Okay, thank you,
Mark.
Uh-huh. Thank you.
Okay. Any other discussion? Capital priorities, number one, design and establish an Interior Alaska Region Emergency Vehicle Operational Course Track. Wonder where that came from, Chief.
We've all won it, so.
Okay. We looked very critically at this on the property on 30th Avenue that we have there, but our engineering department looked at the ground. Basically, it's wet ground, so if we cleared it and put an asphalt cover over it, you know, within a couple years, it'd be waving, and it'd be continuous maintenance upgrade, and the budget would get out of control. So we have to think outside the box, see if the state of Alaska can do something like that, or fund it for us to go do it at another location. Ms. Sprinkle.
I do know that the problem they have is that trying to do it at the airport or on the post makes it problematic for getting people together. They cancel things. So there's a history of need, and we thought we were brilliant with the 30th Avenue idea, but it didn't work out. So I think it's, and this can be, if we run it, we can make money on it because we can rent it.
Mr. Marney.
I know those, you know, the big buildings that are going up on Van Horn left and right, they have a different process. You get some kind of coal ash or something from the university. I mean, you know, like the Alaska Rubber Building and that back in there. Mm-hmm. So maybe something we could research how they do it, how they're doing it.
Bob, come on up. Thank you. Thank you for being here this morning, Bob. Mayor.
Buildings on Van Horn, I've been involved in a couple of those over the years. And when you're building a building, you typically dig through the overburden around here. We're underlain by gravel, 1,000 feet of gravel. So once you dig through the overburden, you get down to gravel. Even if it's in the water table, you're pretty much good to go for your foundation of your building. The track for the practice driving, I mean, you're talking a major excavation. You're not just talking excavation for building. You're acres of excavation, and typically out at 30th Avenue, we probably have to dig down 13 feet. I recall when we put in the that mock building next to the offices, it's just a small building. I actually had to dig down 13 feet to get to gravel, and that's what it takes to stabilize the foundation. I mean, you're talking millions and millions of dollars to dig out the overburden where the snow dump is now to make a service that will hold pavement. Otherwise, it'll just be constantly maintenance. But that's the answer to the building. They got a small footprint. They dig on down, and they do use coal ash. But I think coal ash might start to be considered a contaminated material from what I'm hearing lately.
Oh, God.
So I don't know if I would actually think about it.
Let me get this straight. A burnt natural carbon is now going to be a contaminated material.
It's you know.
I can't wait for that one.
Anyway.
Yeah. Any other questions for our head of engineering? Bob, thank you very much. Greatly appreciate you being here. Mr. Clearworth and Ms. Therrien.
There's two other items I was thinking about, and the chief is still back there. Maybe you could come forward. Some months ago, we were talking about the radios and the state requirement on that. That's an issue that I remember being on this for many, many years, the state forcing us to do something but not helping to fund it.
Oh, sure, the ALMR radios?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're looking at the tune of $126,000, I think, next year to upgrade all of our radios. And the system that they're running, they're upgrading the ALMR system, and half of our radios don't meet the requirements to go to the next, you know, version. So we're gonna have to completely scrap those radios and get new radios. And so yeah, it's pretty big.
Maybe we could, I'd like to add that to the list and write up something. As legislation can help us, we should do it.
Could you get us basically a number two on that, on how you'd word that, Jerry?
Well, I just rely on him.
Yeah, okay. I can. Yeah, let me talk to Captain and Mike. Mike, as well as doing all of our video redaction, is also in charge of our radios.
We've had it in this document in years past, and maybe even Danny could find it. I don't know. It'd be about 10 years ago or something like that.
Ms. Therrien, then Mr. Ringstead, then Ms. Sprinkle.
I was just going to ask if anybody else had anything that they wanted to add, and whether or not, Mayor, have you looked at the borough's list of priorities yet?
No, I'll be going through that on tomorrow with Greer.
Okay, maybe we could get a copy of that before we vote on this.
Okay,
thank you,
Mr. Ringstead. Then Ms. then Ms. Sprinkle.
So on the radios. With the states upgrading their system, do all the municipalities, then everybody's in the same boat that we are, they're having to upgrade their equipment because of the new state system.
Everybody that uses the ALMR system, yes.
You know who all uses that? I would assume most of them.
A lot of them do, yeah.
Everybody,
I don't want to say everybody, but
you're right. All the bigger cities probably all do.
Yeah, I think they all bid on that Apple back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
I think
it's not just our issue.
UAF and airport
Anchorage, Juneau, Kenai, those guys use it?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Ms. Sprinkle?
I wonder, do we want to include Moore Street in our list as Valerie had come to request some help on the siding, I believe it was?
It's open for us.
She had it listed last year. They funded it, and then the governor vetoed it.
Mr. Cleworth?
Yeah, Sue, tomorrow, I guess, we're getting into a resolution, 5147, about it, but I don't see any reason why we can't add that onto here and refer to that resolution.
Because it, yeah, passed last year.
Yeah.
The other question I had was about the stabilization facility we were talking about. Brenda, is it something that we could ask the state for? Do we not? Is that too far away?
No, it's too close.
Oh, dear.
DP knows the answer to this, too. So we're going to try for renovating a building. I think it's a better cost savings for Fairbanks. And we do have money coming from Murkowski through a congressional direct request for that.
Oh,
so
great.
Alaska Behavioral Health is interested in being the provider. So we'll keep you all updated on that. But I don't think we need to have it on the capital priority list.
Wonderful news twice. Yeah. Thank you. Great.
Mr. Marnie.
Just real quick, I think everyone should be a sponsor on this. Everybody agree?
Okay. So we have three capital priorities. Number two will be written by the chief for the funding of radios and that aspect. Then number three is the Moore Street funding. What's that? No. Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I'll have our city attorney do that one from our, write it from our work session tomorrow that's included with that. So the three items, is there a fourth or a fifth? Any thoughts from anyone? And I'll be meeting with Grier tomorrow. I don't know if they've got their priorities done yet. We're in a time frame crunch here. But I don't worry about that because we both have the same, Yuri works for both of us. And we can have a pretty good synergy with Grier, myself, and Yuri in this. Ms. Sprinkle?
In the interior delegation?
Yeah.
16th, okay, thank you.
Anything else before we adjourn? Well, since it's a work session, closing comments. Mr. Ringstead, Mr. Marnie, Ms. Tidwell, Ms. Sprinkle, Ms. Therian, Jerry. We're adjourned. Thank you, everyone. We're adjourned till tomorrow morning at 7 a.m.